live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue. This is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, Mr. Bike Dave Glowatz is back. He's actually right here to talk all things local politics. And I promise you, he did ride his bike. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist, Ben Jarofsky.
Yeah, hello, everybody. We got a great show today. Yes, Mr. Bike is in the studio. Yes, he rode his bicycle.
Mr. Bike. Mr. Bike. Come on. Yeah. Mr. Bike.
No bike talk. We're not allowed to talk bikes. He's not going to ring his bell. What is that sound? I think that's the bell.
I think
that's
the geek meter from last week.
I think the geek meter. The geek meter will be set off a lot by Mr. Bike. By the way, Mr. Bike, I just want to tell you, I tried to promote the segment on Facebook. I said, you know what? I'm going to discover my inner millennial. But I couldn't do a link to you because guess what? You're not on Facebook. So
that's correct. That's
Facebook.com/InsideGov. That's Inside GOV.
Wait, time out. You're not in there as Mr. Bike or Dave Glowatz?
Inside Chicago.
Ah, he's promoting. Look at that. He's on a different thing. D, you should have known that. Anyway,
and
let's go back.
And Facebook.com/BikerTricks for urban bikers.
Wait, time out. So if you look at it, won't see a picture of you?
Correct.
Well, all right. I will know that in the future. Biker's Tricks. Uh-oh.
What the hell is that?
That's the geek meter.
It's too cold to stand outside and take the bell off of my handlebar, so I recorded it.
Oh, okay. I love when I love when he rings the bell. Ding, ding.
It loses something in the digitization.
Dave Glowatz is in the studio. We call him Mr. Bike because he wears many hats. One of them is a biking helmet. He knows more about biking in the city of Chicago, biking anywhere, than anybody I know.
Lance Armstrong.
He knows more about biking in the city of Chicago than Lance Armstrong.
Lance knows more about doping than I do.
Yes. Dave Glowatz is no dope. Dave has a whole bunch of tape, a whole bunch of recordings from last week's city council meeting where they passed the budget. We're going to take the deep dive in the budget. And Dave Glowatz, in another lifetime, would come over to my house once a week or once every other week and interview me, talk to me about city politics. It was a blast doing that. We, for how many years? Did we, 10 years?
Well, we did the podcast for 10 years, or 11, I think. We did 11 years.
Whoa.
At the end of which, we transferred to doing it over at the studios of that radio station that you were on.
Oh, I can't remember the name of it. You think I would remember?
It's WCPT 820. But listen, Dave, that's really interesting. Like, you were doing, like, podcasts before podcasts were, like, a thing, it seems like, right?
One of my credentials is that I'm the host of the original Ben Jarofsky podcast.
No, I got to give him credit. It was 2007. I think it was 2007. Yeah. We have a mutual friend, Kevin Lamb, who is best known for being a cheesehead and loving the Green Bay Packers.
He has a problem with that.
He has a lot of issues, and he's trying to confront them. Okay, that cheesehead
thing.
He's
trying to confront them with you, actually.
He just sent me a text. He's just so obnoxious. Kevin Lamb, when it comes to his beloved Green Bay Packers. Anyway, so he was the one who said, Dave, you should meet Ben, and Ben, you should meet Dave. And I remember I was at a TIFF talk.
It's a panel discussion.
Panel discussion. On TIFFs. And
sponsored by Independent Voters of Illinois, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you were correct. I think Mike Quigley may have been there as well.
Perhaps.
Am I right about that?
Perhaps.
Anyway, Mike Quigley at the time probably would have been a Cook County Board Commissioner. So Dave said, hey, let's do this thing, a podcast. I didn't know what the hell it was. And I said, sure, why not? 10 years later, he would be interrogating me, D. He would interrogate me. All right, now the shoe's on the other foot. Yeah, I'm going to really grill him. So now he's a regular on my show. And Dave, we're going to be talking about the city council, Lori Lightfoot, passing the budget. Dave takes the deep dive. He's got a lot of good audio. But before we do that, I'm going to ask you this question. This question was in my beloved Bright One today, home delivered as always, regarding an older woman from the 39th ward in the city of Chicago, Northwest Side. Samantha Nugent is her name. She's a rookie alderman. And she's upset because the mayor is taking away a TIF that's in her ward, the Irving Park Elston TIF. She's abolishing the TIF. And when the mayor abolishes a TIF district, the city council needs to vote on it. When the mayor does that, then all the taxes that normally get diverted to the TIF bank account are there for all the taxing bodies. So it's property taxes that instead of supporting whatever programs are in the TIF, will support the schools and the parks and the libraries, et cetera, and so forth. Alderwoman Samantha Nugent is upset because she wants to use at least some of the $161,904 in the closing balance in this TIF for, quote, ornamental metal signpost to identify the old Nerving Park neighborhood she represents. Quote, we're starting to get a lot of restaurants and shops, and we want to help promote that. In your humble opinion, Dave Glowatz, should that $161,904 be used for ornamental metal signposts in the old Irving Park neighborhood? Or should it be used for schools, parks, police, firefighters, et cetera, and so forth? Dave Glowatz, answer that question.
The first thing I would do is look at the redevelopment plan for that TIF district and see if it's covered in the plan.
To see if what's covered in the plan.
What Alderman, I'm sorry, with what the city council member Nugent would like to do.
In other words, you're saying something that I wasn't even raising, that this district was created for something other than ornamental signposts. And in fact, she may be using money that was intended for something other than an ornamental signpost on an ornamental.
I'm just leaping right up to the balcony view and saying that every TIF district has a document associated with it at its creation called the redevelopment plan, which outlines what the district money is intended to do. And for all we know, that's right in there.
Yeah. So in other words, let's say it was. Let's say, okay, by the way, a bit of an evasion and a duck and a dodge of the question. It was a direct yes or no.
I think I answered your question.
Yes, you did answer the question, but it was a duck and a dodge.
It's like that saying, you know, God answers every prayer, but sometimes the answer is no. Let's move on.
Yeah. So then you're saying, no, she shouldn't be able to spend the money.
No, I was making an entirely different point. I'm just saying that this might be an intended use of that money, but without looking at that plan, I have no idea.
All right. So
I will answer your question, yes or no. If it's in the plan, then I'd say sure.
Then she should be able to spend it on that, as opposed to kicking it back to the schools, the parks, the libraries, et cetera.
The question for you is what is it, $200,000+ that the mayor used to rehab her office suite when she came into office? Was that an intended use? What district is that? Is that LaSalle?
I think it's LaSalle District. I think it was $225,000. Don't quote me on that.
So I'm wondering, when they created the redevelopment plan for that TIF district, so they have mayor's office rehab in there?
Well, the point I'm making is that the greatest, if you will, sin, to follow up on your religious themes, of the program is not so much whether they're following exactly the stipulations.
The plan.
The plan to spend the money. It's that they're spending the money on frivolous things that they shouldn't be spending the money on. There are far more pressing needs that we have.
But what if this is what her constituency wants? Doesn't that have any priority?
Well, that's an interesting question. So we should put that to the voters of the... So you're saying that if the people of 39th Ward would rather have the money spent on ornamental signposts as opposed to firefighters, police, schools, libraries, that should be the overriding point, and they should be able to spend the money.
TIF is an economic stimulus tool, right?
That's what it's intended to be, yes.
So perhaps the case has been made or could be made that this marketing function of showing the business climate or proclaiming the business climate literally from the street polls is a way to stimulate some economic activity.
Dave Glowatz could not get through that sentence without laughing. I just want the word. But I give you credit, man. That is it's a great skill to be able to argue any point and play devil's advocate.
I didn't even go to law school.
I saw this story and I go, I know there's people in the city of Chicago who, when they see these ornamental signs, start railing and ranting, what a waste of money. Admittedly, it's not in the total scheme of things. What's the budget? I'm asking you about that. $8 billion? Is that what the budget is?
The number is 11.7. Very good.
Wow, 11.7. I was only $3 billion off.
0.3 billion.
Yes. Wait, time out. It was
$11.7 billion.
Anyway, all right. I just wanted to see if you handled that. But your point's a good one. So now, if it's not in the development agreement, if the Irving Park Elston TIF does not have a line item for ornamental metal signposts, do you think the money should go back to the taxing bodies, or should she be allowed to override that?
I think that even before it came to this point, in other words, there was a city council committee meeting that then ended up in the newspaper, that the agency with jurisdiction, namely the Department of Planning and Development, should have had a conversation with Ms. Nugent and said, you know, we're planning to close this TIF district. How are you doing with that? This is a direct result, I think, of the mayor's executive order to try to rein in the things that aldermen were getting away, I shouldn't say getting away with it, aldermen were allowed to do that were outside the municipal code. And so she asked, the mayor did in her executive order upon taking office, to identify those things. What are the things that you are letting aldermen do that are not statutorily required, but it's just a custom? So what I'm guessing is that people in the Department of Planning and Development who had the largest number of those things that they reported that they were doing with aldermen just haven't figured out quite how the collaboration works yet. Mm. That's what this story is saying to me.
We're going to get into the budget in a little while. This actually ties to the budget story. Essentially, what the mayor is doing is to raise the money to pay for ongoing obligations that she has in this current budget. She's closing TIFs, and so the money that's generally diverted, the property taxes that are diverted to the bank accounts, each individual TIF bank account from which they'll draw to do things like pay for ornamental metal signposts in Old Irving Park, will instead be sent back to taxing bodies like the library, their schools, the city of Chicago, which controls fire and police, the Cook County Board.
President's security detail.
Yeah, so it could go for all things.
Their increased wages.
It could go for all the different items that are covered by the city's budget, the Cook County budget, et cetera. That's what Lori Lightfoot is doing. And I've seen this actually, Dave, from time to time. Aldermen get upset because they've come to view these little TIF funds as their own little mini, well, they wouldn't call them slush funds, but neighborhood development accounts. So that's a nice euphemistic way.
They're very possessive of
them. Yeah, yeah. And in fact, in the same Sun-Times article that Fran Spielman wrote, Walter Burnett of the 27th Ward is lamenting, he's siding with Alderwoman Nugent, saying some of the TIFs that are in my ward are TIFs that I initiated to encourage the Department of Planning to put in. So aldermen should be notified and okay taking them out, Burnett. So he's sympathetic to her. I'm a little less sympathetic to her because I think the money was taken from the schools, the parks, et cetera, in the first place without proper oversight. So now they're just sort of kicking it back. But your point is very well taken. Mayor Lori Lightfoot acting like an alderman when she needed her city offices redone. She just dipped into the TIF slush fund, found $225,000 to fix up her offices. And I remember there was a few years ago, Mayor Daley did the same thing. Wasn't it when he was building a ramp? We talked about this, I think.
A ramp?
A ramp for wheelchairs that went to the city council when they redid the lobby outside the city council chambers.
I know that ramp.
Yeah, they dipped into the good old TIF fund, and Brendan Riley was upset about that one from the
40s. Because that's technically in his ward. Right?
Yeah, someone's going to dip into that TIF fund. He wants to do the dipping.
By the way, I believe that Ms. Nugent calls herself alderman, as does Pat Dowell, as does Kerry Austin.
Is that true?
Yeah, I could tell, but you just go to her website and...
Yeah, the Sun-Times just wrote ALD,
of course,
period.
Yeah, yeah,
my beloved bright one. Anyway, I'm just quoting the great Alderwoman Sue Garza.
Who does call herself that.
She says, and she urges all other women in the city council. So I'm following Sue Garza's lead. All right, you have a bunch of interesting clips that you want to play. I'm going to turn it over to you and lead young Dennis through the playing of these clips, and then we'll analyze them.
Well, as you said a moment ago, the city council passed an $11.65 billion city budget on November 26th at their meeting. And
yes, that's billion with a B.
And what was the vote on that?
Well, there were about 8 ordinances. It's kind of an arcane thing, is that it's still really difficult, I think, for the average person to go to a city council meeting and figure out what the heck they're talking about.
Yeah.
Even though they have, you know, I have right here the agenda. And it does have 8 wow. items on it, all relating to the budget, but none of them actually say this is the city budget. You know, there's the substitute ordinance amending the appropriation. There's a substituted series of amendments. There is the appropriation ordinance. There is various municipal code changes. Basically, what it boils down to is there is a revenue budget that defines where we're getting money from, taxes, fees, fines, and then there is a appropriation budget that lays out everything that we're going to spend money on. So there's a revenue side and there's the spending side. There were 2 essential roll call votes. There were a bunch of at-large voice votes, but 2 roll call votes that were key. Mm-hmm. For the appropriation ordinance... And the revenue ordinance passed 39-11. And if you'd like the, here's a scorecard.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, for those just listening on the download, ladies and gentlemen, David Glowatz has the documents.
He does. He does have the documents. This is really helpful.
One of the things to note about that is that it didn't pass unanimously. And this is the vote that's often reported as the one that was the city budget vote, because they packaged about a half dozen ordinances into that one. If you run down the list, you'll see names like L'Espada, Taylor, Rodriguez, Sigcho Lopez, Rodriguez Sanchez, Ramirez Rosa, Vasquez, Martin, Haddon. These are some of the newbies, so-called progressives. Some are self-proclaimed socialists. And if I'm not mistaken, there were a half dozen people who call themselves socialists that said, they issued a statement ahead of time that's saying, we are voting no on this budget together. There are a couple of people who are, I think we would agree, not conforming to the socialist moniker, namely Alderman Beal of the 9th Ward,
yeah,
and Alderman Lopez of the 15th Ward, who also voted no on that, mm-hmm, on that thing. The other big roll call vote was essentially one about raising property taxes next year. I'm sure you've talked about this. This is a big issue, like whether the mayor was going to try to go to that well, mm-hmm, and try to raise revenue. And as it turns out, the city is raising property taxes next year to the tune of about $72 million, but only $25 million of that is actually going to result in increase in your bill, my bill, everybody else's property tax bill. The other amount comes from stuff like closing TIF districts, because now some of this property is being put back into the general revenue stream. So yay for closing TIF districts. However, because it does raise property taxes, this other ordinance, notice that the vote was 35 to 15. Mm-hmm. So four more aldermen jumped on. Who jumped on? It was Alderman Hopkins of the 2nd Ward, Alderman Napolitano of the 41st, Riley of the 42nd, Smith of the 43rd.
James Gardner as well. This is an important point that Dave's making. Follow us on this one, folks, because it gets a little complicated. There was money appropriated by the city council to pay for all the goodies in the budget. That passed 39 to 11. Then there was a different vote on raising the property taxes by how much did you say, 20 million?
$72 million.
That passed 35 to 15. So this is a distinction without meaning, but apparently these aldermen and alderwomen wanted to make this distinction. They wanted to say they voted no to literally raising the property taxes. What they don't tell you is that they voted to appropriate the property taxes. So I guess, I don't know what
they want to be able to say, yes, to their constituents, mm-hmm, that I did not vote to raise property taxes, even though the budget is not complete without this additional set of revenue. So they came up with some creative ways, which we can talk about in a minute, about how to close what the mayor advertised was nearly a $900 billion shortfall in expenditures, anticipated 2020 expenditures versus 2020 income. Mm-hmm. Mayor Hopkins. Wow. Alderman Hopkins. Well, everybody's getting
Freudian
promoted
slip
today.
Yeah. Brian Hopkins. Yeah.
He wrote a letter to his constituents. I have the letter right here, where he said, while many arguments were offered during the course of debate in support of using a property tax increase to help close the gap, the one I just talked about, I am well aware of the burden that would put on all property owners in the 2nd Ward, which is his ward. That's why I have consistently pledged to oppose any increase in the property tax levy. What was that name of that guy who got all these congressmen to make a no new taxes pledge?
Norquist?
Yeah, Norquist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it sounds like Hopkins is kind of channeling his own Norquist.
I would like to point something out about Brian Hopkins as your 2nd Ward alderman, which is a very bizarrely drawn ward. I would want to say it's on the north side, but it kind of like stretches all over the place. So it's north side, northwest side, etc.
Streeterville to Bucktown is what,
yeah, and very narrow. It's a gerrymandered ward. He was the quarterback, if you will, that led the charge for the Lincoln Yards TIF vote, which, as Dave Glowatz knows, raised property taxes throughout the city. So it's interesting that now suddenly he is a champion on behalf of the beleaguered property taxpayers of Chicago. So he's voting no on raising property taxes $72 million, did you say, in this current budget to pay for things like police and firefighters, stuff that we need, but that he was leading the charge to raise property taxes by untold hundreds of millions. I don't even know how much because it's so convoluted when you get into a TIF, but to approve a handout, what was it, Lincoln Yards is $1.3
billion? Yeah, $1.3
billion. $1.3 billion. So it's one of those things.
Where you can have your cake and eat it too.
Thank you. Well done. Well done, Mr. Bike.
So let's go on to some of the other, some of these no votes are kind of interesting.
Okay.
I would categorize the no votes as sort of principle about there are things we can do better in terms of social justice and so-called progressive revenues that this budget doesn't address. This is a contention by some of the progressive aldermen. And then there were a couple what I would call very detail-oriented objections that say these particular things in the budget don't work. The first one I want to highlight is from Alderman Lopez of the 15th Ward, and let's listen to what he had to say.
What we've seen in this budget is that, for starters, it's a violation of the law. This budget is not balanced. This budget isn't just precariously balanced. It's completely unbalanced to the tune of $163 million. If you were to take at face value what this administration has presented, if $163 million doesn't happen, and if the rosy projections by the administration don't come true, there will be a supplemental ordinance saying property taxes have to go up, or 1,000 positions are finally truthfully going to be cut and not rebranded and refurbished in this budget. Deal with the truth now before we're coming back the end of December to address it then.
Some have raised concerns that this budget is built on revenue projections and assumptions. Every budget is built on revenue projections and assumptions, period. To have a balanced budget, we aren't required to have the revenue today. We simply need to have it in the door during the fiscal year 2020. And when it comes to the $168 million in ambulance reimbursements, municipalities across Illinois, not just the city of Chicago, already receive reimbursements for these services. The difference is that all these municipalities and the city of Chicago have worked together with the governor's administration to see our costs fairly reimbursed.
That was 42nd Ward Alderman Brendan Riley, who was sort of rebutting what Alderman Lopez says. So what they're talking about is in mayor's budget is $163 million that isn't quite a sure thing yet. And what they're talking about is this. Let's say when you leave the studio today, you walk out the front door of the Sun-Times building, some guy runs up, grabs you, and body slams you to the curb, and you hit your head. Not that this is a common occurrence, but I'm just using it as an example.
What an example to use.
So then,
whoa, what are you saying? Anyway, let's follow your example.
So Chicago Fire Department ambulance comes, mm-hmm. takes you to the hospital. Presumably you're okay, you still live and you're healthy. Then what will happen is the city of Chicago will send you a bill mm-hmm. for that ambulance ride, and it's usually hundreds of dollars. So they charge for that. Well, apparently what's been happening is that with indigent people, they never recover that money mm-hmm. because they don't have it.
Yeah.
So what this part of the budget says it's going to do is they're going to start billing Medicaid for these rides that indigent people are taking, where apparently they had not been billing Medicaid before. And Medicaid is a federally subsidized, state-run health plan. Apparently the governor is on board with providing this revenue, but I guess the federal government has to okay it before it happens. So what Lopez is saying is that the feds haven't approved it, so it's technically not in there yet. And he's going so far as saying, well, that's why this budget is out of balance, and therefore it violates the law. Mm-hmm. And Riley rebuts it and says, well, you know, there's a lot of things in here that haven't materialized
yet. They're projections.
Yeah.
So what's your position on this? The Riley versus Lopez discourse.
I was very curious that this sort of elucidation that I've just made has not been made by the Lightfoot administration. Everything I've seen reported about saying it's a pretty sure thing, it's sort of pre-approved like a mortgage loan, you know, but they haven't talked about how common it is elsewhere, why it hasn't been done in the past, to try to sell it, which seems to me is a really No, it seems like a mistake. You know?
They haven't done enough to sell what?
Sell this particular revenue package that would have cut the feet out from under Lopez of this argument.
Mm-hmm. I got to say this. I'm delighted to hear that argument come from Ray Lopez, a frequent guest on this show. Ray Lowe, if you're listening. He's come a long way. I remember when he was a rookie alderman interviewing him as a rookie alderman. I think that Ray Lowe, when was that? 2015. I went down to your offices. I interviewed you. He was a babe in the woods, just been elected. To hear him speak with such authority about the budget process, I got to tip my hat to him. He was paying attention. He's learned a lot. And I say this as an old guy to a young guy because he's a millennial. I believe that Ray Lowe and I don't see eye to eye on a lot of things politically. He's more conservative than I am, but I welcome his voice. And I'll tell you why I say this, Dave. What he's saying is absolutely true. Any budget is a projection, and generally they're making the best projection possible in order to, as Ray Lowe points out.
That's what Riley is saying, actually.
Okay, yes. All right. So any budget is a projection, and they're putting the best spin possible on the budget so that they can claim it's balanced. And my guess is that when all is said and done, Ray Lowe will be proved correct, and Riley will not be proved correct, and they'll be coming back at some point in this year, just as Ray Lowe is predicting, and asking for more money on the grounds that they're running low on money because they were too glowing in their projections back in November of 2019. So I think Ray Lowe is correct. I think his voice is needed. I think that any voice in the Chicago City Council that points out sort of the fallacies and the tricks that mayors employ to convince us that they're balancing a budget when in fact they have no idea if the budget is balanced is welcome.
We're on the same page on this. I think both of us as lovers of democracy want to see the opposing voices not silenced. And in the case of somebody like Ray Lopez, to do it thoughtfully and with a certain amount of knowledge that I agree he didn't seem to have before, but
he was a rookie alderman. Yeah. He joined the city council. I think it was 2015. He wouldn't know these things if he was obsessively reading my columns and listening to our discussions, because we've talked about this in the past, how budgets are projections, how there's such a thing as an election year projection, and then there's a post-election year projection. This budget was kind of curious. It really wasn't your typical post-election budget where the mayor has 3 years to just raise taxes and fund things. She kind of punted on this budget.
Yeah, so he's probably getting some of that stuff from your columns and from somebody who sits next to him that wasn't sitting next to him before.
Would that be Edward Burke?
That's right. He changed seats. He's right next to Alderman Lopez.
Yeah. So you're thinking that Ed Burke is explaining to this?
I'm just stating the fact that Alderman Burke now sits next to Alderman Lopez. I'm never used to it.
Let me tell you this stuff. This is what's going on.
So let's move on to another argument that people had. Someone else who is another frequent critic of the Lightfoot administration in its short tenure is Alderman Anthony Beal of the Ninth Ward, and let's hear what he had to say.
I rise to say no to this budget. We stated that when we go to Springfield, if we didn't get what we wanted, that we would have to look at property tax. Well, we went to Springfield and we didn't get what we wanted. We got zero from what my good friend Willie Wilson says, a casino that we didn't get. Springfield asks, why didn't we do an RFP on the casino? I ask that we do an RFP because you never know what kind of fish you might catch just by putting an RFP out there. You might have got somebody that said, just maybe we can look at doing something with the formula that was in place. A wise man in my ward told me just last night that he recalled that Harold Washington had a budget that passed December 30th at 9 o'clock at night because this body was working to balance a budget. What's the hurry if we anticipate in getting this $163 million? Well, I tell you what, if we don't get that $163 million, you all are going to be raising property taxes on the backs of our people, and then how many accolades are we going to have in this body?
So Alderman Beal makes a few points. One, he's reiterating the thing about the $163 million ambulance reimbursement. But the other thing I want to highlight is he's talking about the fact that Chicago didn't implement the casino or didn't put out a request for proposals for a Chicago casino as was enacted by the General Assembly.
I just want to, one more time, I cannot say this enough. In all due respect to Alderman Beal and all due respect to Alderman Lopez, again, I welcome any dissenting voice in the Chicago City Council. I welcome more light shed on the budget process. I welcome people going back, getting historical, comparable parables like Harold Washington, what went down.
I'm guessing that made that a favorite comment of
yours. I welcome all that. I would just want to point out that both Raylo and Beal, like Hopkins, voted for Lincoln Yards. And when they created Lincoln Yards, folks, don't be ignorant, okay? If we're all about educating the public, what they did was they took very valuable property in a gentrifying neighborhood off the tax rolls so that it couldn't be taxed. And when they did that, they forced tax rates on everybody else to go up to pay the bills. So they voted to raise your property taxes when they created those two TIFs, Lincoln Yards and 78. Now they're coming back and saying how much they care about you and your property tax bill. So it's good to listen to what Beal and Lopez and, oh boy, Hopkins have to say as they're looking out for your property tax on this budget. But then you have to ask them, where were you? Where were you, the vigilant defenders of our property tax bills, when it came to voting yes for Mayor Rahm's TIF at 78 and Lincoln Yards? And I just had to say that.
And okay, actually, a city council member made your point during that meeting. It was Alderman Michelle Smith of the 43rd Ward.
Another reader of Benjirovsky's column from a long time ago.
She said, I don't remember the exact quote, and I'm sorry I don't have the clip, but she said, anyone who voted yes on Lincoln Yards should vote yes on this budget. And she did vote yes on the budget herself, by the way.
I'm not quite sure.
It's a similar point. It's not the same,
it's same point.
Point.
I would not phrase it that way because I would have voted no to Lincoln Yards a million times. But I get her point. It's like a distant cousin of the point I'm making right here. When I hear Anthony Beal and I hear Raylo, and as much as I appreciate them speaking out against this budget, I'm just reminded, Dave, about just the utter inconsistency and the hypocrisy.
That was the word I thought you were going to use, hypocrisy.
Utter hypocrisy of our aldermen who champion, and the Politanos in that boat too for the 41st Ward. He voted for those two TIFs. Anybody else? I think Brendan Riley voted no on the
Lincoln Yards.
On Lincoln Yards. I want to say.
I don't recall.
I can't recall. But just the other hypocrisy, like a tax hike is not a tax hike when it's in a TIF district. But a tax hike is a tax hike when it comes to what? Voting for more money for firefighters and police. And so I would like a little less hypocrisy and a more honesty on the part of our aldermen when they're standing up for the beleaguered property taxpayers. That's all.
Hear, hear. The other point that Alderman Beal makes is around this, as I said, the city casino. So here's what happened. After the state passed the law allowing Chicago to finally get a casino that some people have wanted for a long time, the law included an economic feasibility study that had to be done within 90 days. So I don't know who went out and hired this Las Vegas-based firm, but some outfit called Union Gaming Analytics found that, you know what, the tax structure is just too onerous, that whoever does this, they can't make enough money. It ain't going to work. So at which point, the Lightfoot administration kind of threw up their hands and said, well, you know, this we can't put out RFP for this thing. Let's go back to the General Assembly. Yeah. And this is what Beal is specifically talking about. She said, let's go back in November to the General Assembly during their veto session and see if we can't get them to lower the taxes in that law on the casino so it can make more money. Mm-hmm. Well, right after that, that announcement, the chief sponsor of essentially the Chicago casino law, Senator Terry Link of Waukegan, said that he was skeptical. He said, quote, whoever runs it is still going to make lots of money, unquote, without changing the law. So Beal is saying, look, you could have gotten this money some other way. You don't have to rely so much on other revenues like property taxes if you had actually just put this thing out for bid. And then your colleague, Robert Herguth in the Sun-Times, reported Mayor Lightfoot's connection to gambling interests, namely that she's received about $250,000 from relatives of a gentleman named Neil Bloom, who's a casino operator. Yeah. So these are just facts. So it's interesting that Beal raises this.
Yes, indeed. The state legislature passed a casino bill that would allocate a certain amount of money for the city of Chicago, a certain amount for the state of Illinois, and a certain amount of money for the operator. And then, as you said so well, this consultant report said that's not enough money for the operator, at which point Lori Lightfoot went back to Springfield to ask them to change the formula. And we've talked about this on the show many times, Dave. Who's going to lose? if you're going to give more money to the operator of the casino, then either the state or the city is going to lose some money on the deal. And I am with Beal on this one. I'm like, no.
Negatory.
Negatory. Anthony Beal, I'm with you on this one. Absolutely.
I should point out that even if a casino RFP had gone out, that would not have affected the 2020 budget because they would still have to award it. There wouldn't be any operation, presumably, until the end of the year.
Well, you can make projections. Again, budgets are, they could be sneaky, and they could go, well, we project that the budget will be operating by November of 2020.
And, you know, to play devil's advocate with myself, they could put in a temporary casino in a place like, oh, I don't know, the Thompson Center.
Yes.
And start to hurt the money
rolling.
I love
it when he plays devil advocate with himself. On one hand, this, it's like Woody Allen in Bananas, where he cross-examines himself. You remember that?
I'm yeah, millennials. Yeah. Hang tight, guys.
Anyway, I'm with you, Beal. Okay, I wish you could have... Oh, the bike.
That was the cash register.
Oh, that was the cash register. I'm with you, Beal. I wish you had voted no on those two tips, but you're absolutely correct. They should have requests for... By the way, that's the other thing that kind of... acronyms, RFPs. You were talking at the outset about how when you take a look at the piece of paper that says what's in the agenda, no normal human being would know what they were doing. This is supposed to be the let in the light era of transparency.
That's a great slogan.
What, let in the light? Yeah, thank you. I wish I had thought about it.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
This little light of mine, let it shine with a piece of paper that says exactly what you're doing.
She never sang it, though.
Oh, yeah, she never. But I don't know. It's just like when guys get up and do the acronyms, you know, RFP. Then you should say what an RFP is. Not everybody knows what an RFP is. Sorry, man.
Let's see about some other aldermen's objections. Let's talk about now some of the so-called progressive aldermen and what they had to say.
So-called progressive? Are you doubting that they're really progressives?
I'm just saying, you know, it's not my term, it's their term. Let's first go to the 25th Ward alderman who was elected this year, Alderman Sigcho Lopez.
Who will be a guest on this show, I think, Friday, I want to say.
Well, let's hear him in advance.
Quite frankly, this is the easiest vote I've ever taken in 4 years.
Starting out with Alderman Garza.
I hear some of my colleagues talking about an easy budget. But let me tell you that outside these walls, for Chicagoans in this city, it is not easy. Just a few days ago, one of the developers that was a beneficiary of the previous administration did not do the minimum affordable housing, was also trying to evict a 72-year-old senior in the middle of the winter. So how are we going to address the issue of affordable housing when it's not our priority? Now, understand that we don't have unlimited resources. However, we got to define our priorities. As a city council member, I got my priorities very clear because I see my constituents every day coming for resources, from Chinatown to Pilsen to the West Loop, the lack of affordable housing, the lack of resources for mental health services, and it's painful to be silent.
Before Alderman Sigcho Lopez spoke, there was a quick clip there of Alderman Sue Garza, Sadlowski Garza, of the Alderwoman Sue Sadlowski Garza.
Get it right.
Get it
right. Come on.
Who notably said, this is the easiest budget I've ever voted for. And Sigcho Lopez said, maybe it's for you, but it's not for me. And he talked about the fact that the budget does not include expenditures for affordable housing and mental health services that many of his constituents and many of other aldermen's constituents across the city have wanted. And notably, he is the alderman of the area called the 78 that is a beneficiary of another TIF district going in the South Loop. His tone is one of, I can't stomach this. He said, I will not be silent on this issue, even though someone like Sue Sadlowski Garza feels like this is a budget that works for her value-wise. Sigcho Lopez is saying the exact opposite.
Yeah.
It does not work for me value-wise.
The first clips that you were playing had to deal with the raising of the money. And now we're getting into the spending of the money. There's two general subsets of opposition to the mayor's budget. One has to deal with the raising the money. So you heard Hopkins, Beal, and Lopez talking about how they think this is a burden on the property taxpayers. One more time, I'll point out that all three of them were nowhere to be found on behalf of the property taxpayers when it came to the TIFs. But I welcome their concern about the property taxpayers on this budget. So they're concerned about the raising of the money. Now, Byron Francisco Lopez, the alderman of the 25th Ward, is criticizing the expenditure of the money, how the money is spent. And in his particular case, it's not fair or just for the city of Chicago to raise property tax dollars on people and not use the money to meet the most pressing needs that folks have. So that's essentially his criticism.
Which invites a question posed by Alderman Matt Martin of the 47th Ward. If you want to spend more on affordable housing or mental health services, where is that money going to come from? And Martin talked a little bit about that.
When I went to the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, they talked about how easy it is to vote no on something.
This is Alderman James Kappelman.
How much harder it is to negotiate, to get to a win-win, or at least get to a point where everyone loses a little bit. This budget does that.
Ooh, I love
with
that word.
Tremendous respect to my colleague, Alderman Kappelman, a no vote is not easy. Voting no is challenging for me and emotional as well, because communicating that vote does not, in my opinion, reflect the sort of time and effort that individuals have put into the budget. And with me personally, when you've listened to me and you've spoken candidly with me, it's not easy. And so share my frustrations with the budget. And there are frustrations that I think almost everyone I've spoken with to a T shares. Things around overtime that is rampant and unchecked with our police department and our fire department. And I want to emphasize that it's not a frustration with individuals within those particular departments. It's about the larger systems that they find themselves in, and systems that we as a broader city government are in the process of reckoning with, including the rising cost of lawsuits for officer misconduct, alleged and actual, an inadequate investment in affordable housing, especially in communities like mine, which have more resources than many, but not the sort of resources to maintain and expand affordability, which was a big reason why I'm here. Also, my frustration with our inability to bring in more progressive revenue. I think some of my no vote, to be honest, is a reflection of my own failure in terms of my inability, albeit in a short process, to put together information and to sell colleagues on some of the ideas that I mentioned earlier. So my hope is that certainly starting January 1st, if not earlier, that I'll be in a position to help effectuate these things. Because with things like the corporate head tax, I know that there are real reservations with that. And with things like pilot, with other TIF surplusing approaches, and I want to make sure that I do a better job of pitching that so that next year I'm in a position, hopefully, to vote yes.
So notice the tone of Alderman Martin there. I think it's interesting that he says part of the blame lies with myself, mm-hmm. not with the mayor, that I didn't sell these progressive revenue sources, a few of which he names. The corporate head tax, he talks about, there's another acronym for you, PILOT, which stands for Payment in Lieu of Taxes, mm-hmm. namely having large nonprofit institutions like University of Chicago Hospitals and Northwestern Hospital, who currently don't pay property taxes, to agree to a voluntary payment, which is done in places like Boston.
This is really good stuff that you have, Dave. Excellent job bringing these clips in. I'm going to talk a little bit about the bit about Kappelman, James Kappelman, the alderman from the 46th Ward, which is of the uptown area, just east of Matt Martin's ward, which is the 47th Ward. Even though they're in a sort of general area, the same sort of general region of the city, are widely different. What Kappelman is saying, articulating, is classic Chicago verbiage from an alderman or from a mayor, and that is anybody who dares to disagree with the official line of the city of Chicago. And this worldview goes back to the days of Richard J. Daley. Kappelman wasn't even born when Daley was articulating this, and he somehow or other, it's morphed itself into him as a creature. It's like, how many trees have you planted? So if anybody dares to disagree with whatever the all-powerful chief of the city of Chicago said, they're a troublemaker. They're a ne'er-do-well. They never come up with any ideas. You can't get along with anybody. I remember people saying this about the legendary Lee on Dupre. And let me tell you something, Kappelman. Nobody remembers the go-alongs, the cogs in the machine who do whatever the mayor tells them, no matter how dumb it is. But people remember those who had the guts to stand up to a mayor when the mayor was wrong. I'm thinking of the vote to sell the parking meters right mm-hmm. now. Where was it? 39-5, something like that.
Right,
the five people who voted for it, proud, they wear it as a badge of courage. The 39 who went along and used rhetoric much like Kappelman used at the time, Dave, Dave, because we talked about it on our old podcast. Oh, where's your solutions? How many trees have you planted? Can't you just go along for once? Remember Mel saying, nobody reads this stuff anyway.
So you're saying that Kaplan just gave a more sugar-coated version of that.
Yes, a more sugar-coated version.
He
tried to tony it up with his reference to going to some Harvard
school.
And I thought that Matt Martin was correct, and I appreciate what Matt Martin is. Yes, you're right. Matt Martin was saying, I'll take the blame, essentially saying all of you guys, you know, ducked on this issue of implementing progressive ways to pay for government that the mayor was against. You ducked the challenge of taking on the mayor. So I'm going to take the responsibility for not doing a better job of articulating why these are good ideas. I'm going to tell you, Matt Martin, I give you credit for taking the high road by positioning it that way. But I'll tell you this right now. No matter how much sales job you do over the years, no matter how much you package it, no matter how convincing it is, if the mayor says no, the James Kaplmans of the world will not vote for it. That is the reality in the city of Chicago. Most of the aldermen, 26 of the aldermen, I would say, will pretty much follow the mayor off a cliff, which is what they've done in many cases, like the parking meter deal.
So you think Martin is tilting at windmills?
I think that Matt Martin is a gracious guy. He's a real gentleman. I'm proud to say that he's my alderman. He's been on the show several times, and he's putting the best spin possible that you could put on this situation. I do not believe, prove me wrong, city council, but I do not believe, no matter how convincing Matt Martin is, no matter how passionate he is, no matter how much evidence he unveils to show how it's more fair to bring back the head tax or to have pilot or one of our favorites, the LaSalle Street tax. You and I have talked about that for years. All these other progressive ways to raise money to fund the things that we need in the city of Chicago. I feel the forces that are against that, the corporate interests that are against that, have so much clout with Mayor Lightfoot that she would not entertain them, just like Mayor Rahm would not entertain them, just like Mayor Richard M. Daley would not entertain it. And it doesn't matter what an alderman says to try to convince them. If the mayor says no, 26 aldermen at least will, in this case, follow her.
So many people believe that in this last election of how many new aldermen were there? There were 12?
Maybe right.
13. So anyway, some low teens number, that there was enough new blood on the city council to essentially negate what you were saying, that they themselves form a block and could get enough other people to participate that would enable them to take an agenda that a mainstream mayor like Lightfoot would not necessarily cotton to and be able to push it over. But you think that's a pipe dream in this
Well, it was 11. I mean, listen, if you do the breakdown, and this is going into the weeds, but if you do the breakdown to make the point that you made earlier, there were, I think, 6 aldermen of the Democratic Socialist persuasion who would not be afraid, like Matt Martin being one of them, who would not be afraid to stand up to the mayor on issues of taxes. And then there are aldermen like Lopez and Beal, who are more conservative in their outlook, but they have found themselves in this position somehow or other of being outspoken, independent-minded critics of the way Lori Lightfoot is running her city. And that's it. That's where we're at. We're at 11. We're at 11 in the city council. It's a 50-person body, so you need 26 yes votes. So we're far away from that. I think we're better off, and we're in a healthier state, Dave, definitely, than we were, let's say, in 2009 or whenever it was that they voted 39-5 on the parking meter deal. I guess there would be 11 no votes to that parking meter deal. By the way, I think Beal voted for the parking meter
deal,
if I'm correct. Yeah. Yes, Beal.
I know you know the 5 because you had to name them recently.
Yes. I'd like to think that we're in a better position because we had 11 that voted no for whatever reason, you know, a principled opposition. My general issue in the city of Chicago is that all too many people just do whatever they're told and never dare to raise a question, never dare to challenge a mayor, never dare to question a budget report, go along with whatever TIF deal is put in front of them.
Which invites the question, and this will be my last point, what retribution do aldermen fear when they say no in these situations? Some of the aldermen who were naysayers during the Emanuel administration, like Sedlowski Garza, like Wagaspak, are now yay-sayers. But one of the last things that one of the last people to speak on the budget before the passage of it was Alderman Wagasbeck, who is the finance chair and the 32nd Ward Alderman. And this is what he had to say.
Whether you vote against this budget or for it, you should have no fear in your choice. You should have no fear that a city worker is not going to do their job as they have in the past. Streets and sand workers will still get out there and do their job. Police and fire will still do their job. Our workers in forestry, family services, and every department will continue to do their job, regardless of how you vote today.
All right, I must address this. As much as I love Scott Wagasbeck, he's been on the show many times, I disagree with him, and I've used his ward as an example. In the entire history of the city of Chicago, no ward has been punished because its alderman voted against the mayor's budget. And I say that Mayor Rahm, I was no fan of him. And Mayor Daley, I was no fan of him. This is a myth that aldermen put up to justify their cowardice and their failure to stand up to a mayor.
So one must wonder what motivates Wagasbeck to talk like this. I imagine a few possibilities. One is that he understands this perception, like the one that you talked about just now.
Yeah.
Another thing is he doesn't enunciate the idea that there will be retribution in some form. And I'll tell you exactly what happened right after this vote was taken. Reportedly, the mayor had a little pizza party for the aldermen, but the only ones who could come were the ones who voted yes on the budget. That's not such a big deal, but it sends a message.
It does
send
a message.
Right? Why not have the pizza party
petty.
For everybody?
It's pretty petty. But, I call that petty.
But the next thing that happened is that the mayor, as a political action committee, one for her own campaign and one to give money to other candidates that she likes. And the committee for the latter reportedly started putting up the names of the people who voted no on the budget and provided a link so anybody who wanted to give them grief about that, they could follow through in a link and harass them on social media about it. So it's already begun.
That's a different point, and I'll concede that. Absolutely. It was the same way with Mayor Rahm. If you vote no to mayor's budget, that mayor will probably be against you and will run someone against you. Mayor Rahm was always ready to give money to somebody to run against Scotty Wagasbeck because he voted against his budget. That's different than saying that forestry worker will not come out to your ward to trim your trees.
Which is exactly my point. So Wagasbeck, either the point I'm making didn't occur to him or he doesn't believe it. I want to focus on government operations, but the politics is very interesting. I think many of us were led to believe there would be a politics of collaboration in the Lightfoot administration. I think there's some questions here.
I saw the same article. It follows articles. Lori Lightfoot does not play. Okay? So it's the people who voted against her budget. They're going to know about it. She's got this pack. If you click on, let's say, old boy Byron Sixel Lopez's name, it'll say he voted against this progressive budget that was going to correct all the problems that humanity has ever faced. Shame on him. If you click on Ed Burke's name, you'll say, Ed Burke voted for this great triumphant budget. He's a hero to the people.
It's interesting.
Yeah. So it is interesting. Hey, man, that's Chicago politics. I understand it. So if you're an alderman, and you want to go through life unopposed by a powerful mayor, you vote for his or her budget. But you should not go take it the next step and say the city of Chicago is so organized that they're not going to pave your streets. I am going to capitulate to this powerful mayor, vote for this stupid program that he or she wants, like selling off the parking meters, because I'm worried about my streets being paved. I do not believe any mayor. I don't think they're capable of figuring it out.
Wagasbeck is my alderman, so I'll take it up with him at the next ward night.
Better be nice to Scotty, all right? He won't pave your streets. All right, his name is Dave Gloatz. He's done an outstanding job. Can we give, is there a round of applause thing?
Oh, Dave, that was that noise. Tell everybody where people can find you and what you want the people to know.
Find my reporting at Inside Chicago Government. That's shygov.com on your web. On Facebook, go to facebook.com/insidegov. That's Inside G-O-V. And on Twitter, C-H-I-G-O-V-T.
That's correct.